Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Net at Night, episode 155, recorded June 15th, 2010. Ask me anything.
Net at Night is brought to you by Four and voice-activated sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And by GoToMeeting. Visiting important contacts from New York to L.A. and Bangalore to London is time-consuming and expensive. Have meetings online instead with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/night.
This is Net at Night, episode 155. I'm Sarah Lane in Petaluma, California.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Muskoka, Ontario.
Where is Muskoka, Ontario, Amber?
I know. Did you see how I kind of stumbled over that a little bit?
Where am I?
All right, where am I right now? It is a couple of hours north of Toronto, and it is our cottage country. So a lot of people come up here. They have cottages. There's a lot of resorts, and I'm up here speaking at an event tomorrow morning. So I just got here. It's absolutely beautiful. I have a room right on the lake, and tomorrow morning I'll be up bright and early and talking to a group of bankers.
Ooh, bankers. So, yeah, so Toronto has kind of that. Is it kind of like a summer lake?
Exactly.
Catch fish, that type of a thing. I don't really
exactly
know the area, though.
Yeah. You know, it's very similar to some parts of Northern California where they have beautiful lakes, and it's very popular in the summertime. And so this is just the beginning of the season. So it's not too crowded up here, but it's nice and relaxing for now, which is good. Makes me happy.
Talk to a bunch of bankers.
Yeah, I know. It'll be kind of interesting. The funny thing is I spoke to this group 2 years ago. So it's kind of interesting. I usually don't speak to the same group again. You know, they call me in once and then I tell them what I know and then they don't necessarily call me back because they've learned it. But I'm coming to talk to the same group. So I've had to think of an entirely new presentation. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's very exciting to do the show with you. We were just talking before the show started that the two of us have been on, well, you obviously and Leo have been doing Net at Night for almost 155 episodes. I think I've probably been on five of them or so. But yeah. But the two of us are running the show today.
I know. Who knows what is going to happen?
It could
it's a
crazy
mystery to all of us.
Yes.
It could get crazy.
Could
and
get
we've
crazy.
Never met, which is even crazier.
That's
because
the weirdest part about it is that you and I have never been in the same room, I guess. If we have, we didn't know it.
No, I don't think so. And it's funny, I met, I was mentioning this to Leo last week, I met Shira Lazar, I think is how you pronounce her last name. And and she, out of all of the girls kind of in the tech space, I had never met her. And then finally I met her and I'm like, okay, Sarah Lane's the only one who I haven't met. And I literally like have contact with you in some way or another almost every week.
So. I know, isn't that funny? It's like, I forget that we've never met.
And
if we ever did, it would be like, we wouldn't even have to make a big deal out of it.
Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should just keep it like this.
Maybe it's better this way, you know?
Exactly.
We shake hands and something terrible might happen.
All of
you know?
A sudden, it just goes sour.
All the chemistry gone.
Gone.
So what's going on the net besides Twitter being down all the time?
I know. That's kind of one of our top headlines this week. So Twitter has been having a really rough time in terms of staying up and being stable. I know so many times I've tried to post great pictures or update my account, and then all of a sudden they get the message that Twitter is experiencing problems and I can't update. So especially now with the World Cup going on, because they're getting so much traffic, they're absolutely getting slammed. And they've acknowledged that they're having a lot of problems. And saying that they're trying to fix errors and apologizing for the downtime. But it just seems like it never ends with Twitter. I mean, I love the site, but it gets a little frustrating.
I remember back in the day. I mean, when I say back in the day, I mean, I joined Twitter in, I think it was February of 2007. So I wasn't one of the early, early people, but I was pretty early. And this happened all the time. You know, the fail whale was sort of this cute little lovable thing that happened. And then as the service continued to grow, whenever this would happen, it became a lot more annoying. And, you know, it would kind of cripple us because we were all starting to use Twitter for things other than just to, you know, say funny things to each other. You know, it was to get news and information and share links and pictures. And, you know, I'm, it's sort of like I've just gotten used to it working perfectly. And I know that as Twitter continues to grow, and they are, they have to keep scaling, and it's not always going to be perfect. And yeah, something like the World Cup, great example of them getting flooded with maybe more activity than even they have, built an infrastructure to withstand.
Yeah, I mean, I think the last time they experienced some major problems was last fall. I think it was in October where there was a lot of downtime on Twitter. And you're right, it has been sort of a smooth ride for more than 6 months now. And yet, recently, it hasn't been so good. And I think the frustrating part for a lot of people now is that they're depending on Twitter, like you said, for more correspondence. You know, a lot of people use Twitter just to message people and stay in touch. And so it's a more important part of our lives than just this little tool to share what we're doing right now. It's a place that people are doing business. They're connecting on a regular basis. And so think about it. Think about if your email went down that often. I mean, you would be so frustrated and you would never want to use that service again.
It's so true. I mean, when it's kind of embarrassing, but when my alarm goes off in the morning, my iPhone is my alarm. That's just the alarm that I use. And I don't get out of bed. I just simply roll over and I launch Twitter and I don't go back too far, but you know, I go back over the last 4 hours or whatever to see, you know, what's happened on the East Coast or I get a little just caught up. Like if there was something catastrophic or just a really big news story, I would know before I ever got to my email.
Oh my goodness. I'm the same way. It's kind of frustrating though, doing your own thing and running your own business, because I'll update Twitter and put like a fun little message on there and then I'll get an email from someone like, hey, you haven't responded to my email and I saw you on Twitter. And I'm like, can't I have any fun?
I know.
Can't I have just this little personal moment where I want to share a picture on Twitter just for fun and maybe not work at that exact moment.
Yeah, exactly.
But it kind of busts you a lot.
It's true. I know. It's the timestamp. You were near a computer. Why weren't you responding to my email? What's nice about this, Twitter downtime is not nice. I think we're all in agreement about that. But at least they're being transparent about realizing that it's an issue, saying, you know, we're not happy with the way that things have been working. There's a problem. We're aware of it. I mean, I think that, you know, in cases like this, the worst thing to do is just to keep users in the dark, because then the conspiracy theorists start talking about, well, what's going on behind the scenes and they don't know what they're doing and, you know, that kind of thing. And so that I always appreciate, at least.
Yeah. And I think there's almost this uneasy relationship with Twitter right now, because people are worried about, is Twitter going to make money? I mean, is it going to be profitable? Or 6 months down the road, is it going to collapse altogether? And so when it goes down and they don't say anything, I think people get increasingly alarmed about what might be happening. But you're right. They've been very transparent and they've updated their blog on a regular basis. And that can only be a good thing, just so people have a sense of what's going on. And I think people can deal with downtime here and there, especially with situations like the World Cup, as long as it doesn't continue and doesn't last for too long.
Right. Speaking of Twitter making money, what do you think about companies being able to buy a space on the trending topics area?
I don't really like that too much. I mean, that's my gut reaction.
Mine too. Yeah.
I'm all for companies figuring out ways to use social media to make money. But when they kind of invade on a space like that, which is naturally user generated and it's based on popularity, I just feel as it's just too much. And, you know, isn't Twitter enough right now for companies? I mean, they can go out there, they can broadcast all they want. They can, you know, get their customers. Do they really need to go that extra step and get into trending topics? I don't know. I don't think so, though.
Yeah, I agree. I obviously, you know, the whole is Twitter going to make money, and if so, how, question has been around since day one. And I think that, you know, they're obviously trying to go about it carefully and intelligently, and you know, as non-invasive as possible for the overall user experience. But I feel like, and you know, we'll wait and see what it looks like once this is actually rolled out. But trending topics seems like a really weird place to do that, because trending topics is supposed to be organically what really is the most talked about. And I know that people kind of game trending topics to a certain extent anyways, and it's not Trending topics is almost never a reflection of the topics that I'm most interested in, but I at least get the sense of I have it to my San Francisco area. So at least, you know, I'll kind of look at that on a regular basis and get a sense of what people in at least my area on Twitter are talking about. And I don't like the idea of that being fussed with for profit. But again, yeah. I guess it depends on how they roll it out.
I'm with you. I totally agree. So we have another article here, which is probably good for us because obviously we spend way too much time online.
Yes, we have problems.
Sarah Finney, she wakes up to Twitter. I pretty much do the same thing. And I sometimes check it before I even check my email. It was really interesting to read this article that came out on Mashable just a few hours ago where Nielsen had done a study talking about internet usage in 2010 and particularly usage in the social media space. So their stats revealed that 22% of the time you're spending online, you're engaging in social media. I thought that was pretty phenomenal, especially if you look at the growth compared to last year.
22%, huh? Do you think that accurately reflects your usage? I think that's probably pretty accurate. I mean, I would say, social media, that's also kind of tough because it's like, I also consider, you know, the article that, you know, the Mashable article where we got this information has, you know, Facebook sharing capability over on the left-hand rail. Yeah. It's like, you know, do I read the article and I send it to you? I mean, are we now participating in some sort of social media? You know, it's kind of like the social media is such a thread in so many things that I wouldn't necessarily say I was on a social media site, but I'm still kind of using those behaviors. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the web has obviously become more social all the time, and there are so many tools for sharing. I mean, I even consider sites like YouTube to be social media sites in a lot of ways because of all the sharing capabilities. And so I think it's not so much just that the user is spending more time using social media sites. I think the web in general is just going towards being a social environment, and naturally the users will follow. So it's interesting, you know, to think about how our world is changing so quickly and how all these tools to connect are really becoming increasingly important. And just to, you know, think that people are spending this amount of time, like I know just looking here, when they talk about the average person is spending about 6 hours on these type of social media sites in April 2010, where last year they spent about 3 hours and 30 minutes. So that's some pretty significant growth.
Yeah, I mean, it's twice as much time. I mean, you wonder, you know, people complain about, you know, kids not going outside or playing too many video games. It's social media. That's what's keeping them in. Although I guess with an iPad now or your iPhone or variety of Android devices or netbooks and laptops, then we could just take everything with us. What's also kind of weird, I thought, was that Australians apparently spend the most time on social networking sites, an average of 7 hours and 19 minutes in April. U.S. and Italy came in second and third. With 6.5 hours each. Australia!
I was actually really surprised about that as well. And if I'm right, I should check out the article again. Is Canada on the list? I mean, I feel like they weren't when I looked initially. I should check again just to see. But the Australia thing surprised me a little bit. I mean, that's a pretty significant amount of time as well. But I wondered where Canada kind of fell, and it looks like it's not there at all, which is...
Yeah, I'm not seeing it either.
I don't think they included it because I think, you know, if they actually did, we would be pretty high up on the list just based on, I think there is 1 in 2 Canadians now is on Facebook. So we're a pretty heavy user group when it comes to social media.
I mean, I wonder if you know, I think Australia, what would be the deal? You know, it's not as if I've never known the Australian friends I have to be more, we want to hang out on computers more than anybody else that I can think of. I mean, does it have to do with geographical location that they're on, you know, their own continent and they're, I don't know. I mean, I guess
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
We need some Australians to let us know.
Australians, weigh in. Why are you on social networks so much?
I guess they would be asleep right now, so we can't call anyone up.
Very friendly folks. Maybe that has something to do with it. Just a lot to share.
A lot to share. That's true. Very friendly.
We're all online. It's the moral of that story.
All right. So we have a couple of more links before we get our guest on, which is FormSpring. And I know you're super excited about our guest.
I am. In fact, before we do anything, I think we have a little message from Leo.
We'll be right back with the show in just a minute. But before we do, I really got to tell you about Ford and the Ford amazing Ford Sync. I've been a Ford Sync owner now since last year. And I can't tell you how much I love it. In fact, anytime I try the GPS, the turn-by-turn directions, the hands-free calling, and any other make, I go, what? How could I have used this? We have an, I won't say the name, but our Toyota Highlander, the other car in the family, just doesn't cut it compared to this. I want you to go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. You can find out more about the amazing Ford Sync. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Details are there. Video. You can watch Sync in action. I'm going to give you an idea of some of the features. I mean, we're all making mobile phone calls these days in our car, and you know how dangerous that is. Ford Sync keeps your hands on the wheel, your eyes on the road while you're making these calls. You press the button on the steering wheel. The Sync says, you know, what do you want to do? You say phone. Then it says, okay, who do you want to call? You say by name who you want to call, or you can dial a number by number. Never look off the road. Never keep your hand get your hands off the wheel, and yet you can do everything that you'd want to do. For instance, I use it with Dial to Do, which is a great service, and I'm able to, you know, add stuff to the calendar, send email messages and everything, all using the Ford Sync. It's just incredible. It's true hands-free calling. You also get turn-by-turn directions. You get 911 assist, so if something bad should happen, it will call 911 for you, send the GPS coordinates to them. Sync is available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury dealers. It works with most Bluetooth-enabled phones. In fact, I have a number of phones all connected to my Sync, even my iPad connected to Sync, not for phone calls, but to listen to the audio. You get personalized traffic alerts. Music and podcast search on my iPad, on my iPhone, and most MP3 players on my iPod. If there are traffic alerts and if there's a problem with traffic, it will reroute you with turn-by-turn directions. On some phones, audible text messages as well. They'll read you the text messages. Go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com and learn more. And the next time you're in the market for a car, this is, believe it or not, a reason to consider a Ford. There are lots of other great reasons. I love my Mustang, but Ford Sync makes it all the better. SyncMyRidePodcast.com or visit your Ford dealer and get them to demonstrate the fantastic Ford Sync. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Thanks for letting me interrupt.
Guys, thanks, Leo.
Now back to the show.
That's so funny. You know, it's so funny that Leo, his other car is a Toyota Highlander, which is a car that I own, but I just test drove a Ford Fusion with the Sync technology, and I thought my next car has to be a Ford with this technology. It is so amazing. I love it, and can't wait to get my hands on one of those cars. And I love the cars that have the cameras where you can see out the back. I don't know why. I mean, I've seen a lot of tech, but for some reason, I'm still fascinated
by it. Oh, it's the best, especially if you're trying to get out of a particularly tight parking space you paralleled into. It's so cool.
It is really cool.
I love it. Yeah, my car does the beep, beep, beep when I'm going backwards and I'm getting close to something. But once I saw one of those cameras, I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, my little beepy beep thing is so obsolete.
It
not
seems like
cool
the brick
anymore.
Phone as far as, going back to old technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fun to have Leo beam in. That was hilarious.
Yeah, I know. He was just at E3 and now he's here and now he's gone.
Woo.
Yeah.
Who knew?
It's magic. TV.
All right. So we do have another link in the social media space before we get our guest. And, it's funny because I end up having all these links about social media, not just because this is kind of what I do a lot of now, but because I find that many of the tech sites, I mean, that's what they're reporting on. I get so much stuff from TechCrunch and Mashable and more it's all social media news. I mean, that's what Mashable does best anyway.
Right.
But this was kind of interesting that people are watching Facebook videos longer and Facebook now is now the fifth largest video site. And I thought that was kind of funny because I don't watch a lot of videos on Facebook. What about you?
I watch, that's a very good question. You know what? I post videos on my Facebook page, where fans can like me and things like that. So I do, I'm a video poster, sporadically because I don't want to flood it and annoy people. But I can't really think of a lot of friends of mine in my news stream that are posting videos. That said, when they do, I do tend to watch them.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If someone sends me a link to a video, I was thinking about this, I may not watch it. But you're right. If I see something in my newsfeed on Facebook, I might watch it. Because it's nice how they actually embed the videos. You can watch them right there in your newsfeed.
Yeah.
So you don't have to venture out to YouTube and visit the site there. So I think the whole experience is pretty seamless, which makes it nice.
I think it's probably, you know, I don't know how much it is really about Facebook as... Facebook is just has been so widely adopted, and people do like that inline video viewing. I mean, on Twitter, mm-hmm. unless you're using sort of a Firefox add-on or, you know, Power Twitter, or I'm sure there are others, you don't get that inline video experience yet. But on Facebook and, you know, Tumblr works this way as well. If I've got a video that I know I can just click on that little arrow and it's going to play and it's not going to send me somewhere and I'm not going to lose my original place, then I'm a lot more apt to
watch
so.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I realize how short my attention span is for watching videos online. Like if someone sends me a video and I click on it and it's not interesting in the first 10 seconds, I leave. And it's funny because Chris will always say to me, my fiance, he'll always say, just watch, you know, at a minute it gets good. And I just don't have the attention span to sit through it.
I know. I have a lot of people who send me, you know, cute animal videos because they know me and they know that I'll like it. And I mean, animal videos, I'll be pretty into. And it's like, if it's not really cute and funny within those first few seconds, you know, I might scrabble through a little bit, but usually it's like, not funny enough. There's too many of these.
In this article as well, they talked about how long people were watching the videos. And for instance, the average time people would spend on a Facebook video was a minute and 45 seconds. So I thought that was kind of cool because I think that that's, you know, even though I say 10 seconds, the reality is I may watch for a minute or two, but maybe not necessarily that much longer.
Right. Yeah, I think that sort of, you know, that just sort of plays into the whole question that when you and I as online video creators, you know, we're always asking ourselves the question, well, how much is, you know, how short is too short and how long mm-hmm. is too long? And I mean, obviously the show Net at Night and a lot of the other shows on the Twit Network are a different sort of a format. You know, we kind of tend to blather on and it's more of like an informal thing. But there are a lot of videos that I come across that I just, you know, I'm watching and it's like, it's just too long. And it's not that it's not good. It's just... I don't feel like I have the time or the patience or you know, I get distracted easily or whatever. So it's like that sweet spot is still kind of being figured out. So it's interesting that some services are finding that their video watch times are, you know, longer or better or just more intact
yeah.
in general.
And I think it's not like television either, because with television, even if there's a TV show I'm really not that interested in, I might leave it on in the background and do other things. But with a video, it's not as though I just leave it on the background for that noise. You know, it says, I don't like the video. I mean, click, it's closed, it's done.
Right.
And I'm not going back to the site. So it's a very different experience in terms of how we consume video. And I would think a challenge for a lot of people creating video as well. I mean, how do you actually create something that people want to watch and that is kind of sticky and interesting, because there's so much competition out there. I mean, if we look at this, I'm looking here that, they estimated that 41 million people watch videos on Facebook, which is more than Hulu, CBS, and Microsoft sites. So think about how much video content that is and how much noise there is in that space. I mean, you really have to do something unique to stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, don't we know it?
Oh, yeah. Like Net at Night, live. Yeah,
exactly. Well, should we get our guest on from Formspring to come talk
let's
to
do
us?
It.
All right. I see him over in our little corner. It's Abe. Now, Abe, I'm going to butcher your last name. I'm sure of it. Is it Alono?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Abe.
Hi. It's actually Ade.
Ade. Well, I just butchered that whole thing, didn't I?
No, that's fine.
The last name is the least of my worries. So Ade, and then just why don't you finish the rest of it for us?
Alano.
Ade Alano. That's a great name.
It's a pretty name, yeah.
Ade Alano.
I guess I shouldn't say pretty when I'm referencing a man, right? A pretty name.
Yeah.
A handsome name. Yeah. It's a very handsome name.
This is what happens when the girls are running the show. Pretty. Ade Alano. Ade Alano is CEO and co-founder of one of my very favorite, I think it counts as a social networking site, Formspring, and that's at formspring.me. So good to have you on the show. I know we've been trying for... a couple months now. So thanks so much for being with us today.
No problem. Thanks. Yeah, we've been very busy the last few months, but glad to be here.
Well, you, as a company, physically, you're now based in San Francisco, isn't that right? And that's a new thing.
Yeah, that's correct. We started out in Indianapolis and moved to San Francisco a couple months ago.
So how do you like it? Indianapolis and San Francisco, probably kind of different.
Yeah, very, very different. I love it here. Weather's awesome and it's great. Great space, especially considering what we're doing and what we're trying to do. So it's awesome to be here.
So for everybody who's not familiar with Form Spring, you know, I guess if I was to explain it the easiest way possible, I'd say, you know, you sign up for an account. You know, you just easy to sign up. You could sign up through Facebook. And once you have your Form Spring address, so like it's formspring.me/Sarah Lane is mine. Anybody, whether anonymous or their Form Spring user, and those are settings that I can choose, can ask me any question that they want. It'll go into a queue and then I can answer them. If I want to, I can skip them. If I want to, I can, answer them in the order that I want to. I mean, it's like the simplest thing in the world and it's really caught on. And I mean, how do you explain it, Ade, to people who go, well, what is this question answer thing? Isn't that a little, you know, like too simple for the internet or?
Yeah, no, you explained the mechanics pretty well.
Okay.
Essentially, you can create a profile and people can ask you questions. Typically friends or people that know you, in some way, whether they read your blog or follow you, elsewhere. And then you get a question into a private inbox and you can choose to delete it or answer it. And when you answer, that goes public. And then people can, similar to Twitter, you can follow a number of people within FormSpring and read their answers. So in terms of, you know, why this is interesting to people, essentially, you know, it's Q&A is kind of the foundation for how you interact with FormSpring. But in essence, what you have is that when you get questions in your FormSpring inbox, these are prompts for you to talk about yourself. And that's, you know, one of the things that makes FormSpring incredibly addictive is that even the most introverted person, you ask them the right question and they can talk about themselves for hours. And so it's a lot less daunting than kind of a blank status box or blog draft post that you're looking at to try to think of something creative, original, witty. You're just responding to something that you know that at least one person cares about what you have to say about that topic. So
it's kind of interesting as well, because I know one thing in terms of getting people to have conversations on sites like Twitter and Facebook, one of the best things that you can do is to ask a question. And like Sarah said, right, it's a very simple thing and you may think, oh, this is dumb. Why would you ever want to do it? But the reality is when you ask a question to a group of people, they are more inclined to answer that question than if you just make a comment and you expect them to comment based on that question. And I'm always interested in that. I mean, people are genuinely so interested in just the whole idea that someone's asking them a personal question and they can come back with any type of answer. So as far as the site, I'm looking at the homepage right now and I'm not a FormSpring user, but obviously I need to sign up. I'm checking out the homepage and you have a bunch of different questions. And if you don't want to answer one, you can try a different question. So what's right, that whole experience all about?
So what we're trying to do there on the homepage is get you hooked to start talking about yourself and answering one of kind of our stock questions. And then, you know, the idea is that you start answering questions and you create an account and then start engaging with kind of people in your network, friends and people you're following elsewhere to ask them questions as well.
What's kind of cool about, and Amber, I think that, you know, if we're being honest, we both can kind of admit that, you know, you're often asked to write a bio or, you know, when you're building a new website or, you know, you kind of need to, you know, tell people about yourself. It can feel a little kind of like, oh gosh, more about me type of a thing. And it's so much easier to be able to talk about yourself, which, I mean, as far as people who kind of do this sort of thing for a living, I mean, we kind of like doing it. But if someone's asking you a question, then I can go, oh, you want to know that specific thing? I have an answer for you. Thanks for asking. Rather than me kind of like do this. And now this is what kind of soup I like and da da da. All that stuff would seem to me really oversharey. But the fact that someone really wants to know and they've asked me a specific question, what kind of soup is your favorite soup? Then I'd say, oh, gazpacho. And that doesn't feel so weird. So it's spurring on this conversation that otherwise would feel a little silly if it was just one-sided on my end. Ade, is that sort of the direction that you guys hope that people will be taking?
Oh, certainly. I mean, it's just so much more natural to respond to somebody when you're talking about yourself than just to kind of step on a stage or a platform and just start spouting off your interests and your thoughts and things like that. And when you think about how we interact, whether with friends, whether it's over coffee or beers or whatever, typical conversation is really, you know, starts with Q&A. I mean, that's typically how we talk to each other. We start with a question and answer that and go back and forth rather than just, you know, spouting things at each other that really aren't may not be interesting to the other party. So
I'm always interested when people who work on different websites, when they're at a cocktail party or they're talking to their grandmother or their parents and they ask them, what do you do for a living? Because this seems like a perfect example of how do you explain this to someone when you meet them at a party? What do you say that you actually do? I run a site where you can answer questions. Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, that's part of it. I think we like to think of it as, you know, using, you know, conversational Q&A to connect people. And so it's all about, connecting people and having, making it easy for them to have conversations and express themselves. So kind of like to think about it in that sense. It's much more than just, you know, answering questions and asking questions to each other. It really kind of gets down to having conversation online.
Ade, I know that there are, you can go in and customize your settings. So for example, I let anybody ask me anonymous questions because I just get more of them that way. Because a lot of people ask me questions right. that wouldn't necessarily ask me if they were logged in or if I knew who they were. I allow that and I just kind of ignore the ones, I skip over the ones that I don't want to answer. And I know that if for some reason that bothered me or if I wanted more control over it, I could just allow people who were FormSpring users or whatever. But what's the general... what's the general user base like? I mean, do you find that, you know, you've got a lot of folks asking, you know, the rude anonymous questions, which is mm-hmm. the way that the internet tends to go when people get to be anonymous? I mean, what's the general kind of culture of FormSpring so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty broad. I mean, like you said, you have a lot of control over how you set up your account. You can have full access for people to ask questions without logging in, without having an account and be completely anonymous. Too, you can set it up so that people can't be anonymous and you have to be logged in, a registered user. And so there's kind of a people are pretty broad across those settings. And then people are pretty broad in terms of how they use the service. I mean, we have some people that are rude, but we have, you know, a lot of people who are using in very professional ways and using in very, you know, friendly, fun ways. And we're seeing more and more adoption from even brands starting to use this. Red Bull jumped on FormSpring, I think, a week or two ago and started using that to interact with people, which is pretty cool. We've had cases where, a lot of people in the space like Chris Sacca, Chris Dixon jump on and, you know, talk about investing, talk about tech and kind of the space. And we've had one of the most interesting users is the executive editor for Marvel Comics answer over 3,000 questions on FormSpring.
Wow.
Talking about everything from, you know, why did Jean Grey die to, you know, what are their plans for, Wolverine and, you know, things like that. So it's, you know, again, it's pretty broad in terms of how people use it and then, you know, how they interact. I would say largely it reflects how, you know, people interact with their friends and people around them in the real world and on other social networks.
What's kind of nice about, I'm sorry, Amber, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
Okay. What's kind of nice, one of the things that I like about FormSpring, I had mentioned earlier in the show that I'm a Tumblr user as well. And Tumblr actually has very similar functionality built in to their dashboard experience. People can ask me questions. It goes into a queue and then I can answer and publish them as I see fit. The problem I have with Tumblr is that if I promoted this whole ask me a question thing, it's either going to flood my Tumblr or I have to ignore the questions. There's no sort of in between other place to go. What's nice about FormSpring, and I've been doing this, is that most of my questions just live there. But if I want to port them over to Tumblr, every once in a while I answer a question, I think, oh, I think, you know, maybe my Tumblr community would be kind of interested in this, that I can selectively share. And that's not just Tumblr, you know, that'll go Facebook and that I kind of like, because then it's sort of like, hey, if you really want to know more than you ever wanted to know about me, and you probably don't, but if you do, then you can go over to my Formsing page. And once in a while, I can share with the rest of the world. So I guess I've answered my question. You really are a social media site.
yeah, we are. And we do connect with a lot of, we connect with Tumblr and Twitter, Facebook, and Blogger, a lot of people. And you're right, most people don't share everything with into their Twitter stream or Facebook or Tumblr, but there are a lot of people who really use Formspring as a platform to, I guess, serve as prompts for in-depth blog posts. And so they like to push to Tumblr or Blogger, places like that, to really, sometimes the questions are pretty short, and we limit the questions to 255 characters. But the answers, a lot of times, people answer with kind of pages of responses, and love to kind of share those responses with other platforms as well.
Now, I'm just curious. So let's say I sign up for Formspring and I'm a first-time user. I mean, my biggest fear is that maybe no one wants to ask me any questions. I mean, for someone who is in that situation, are you kind of guaranteed that the community there will ask you something, or should you go out and friend other people and ask them questions? What's the best way to use it?
It's definitely the latter. So we are different from other services in that there's no... your community is kind of built out of the community that you know in real life or on other networks. So if you join Formspring, really what you need to do is to tell your friends that you're on Formspring, or, broadcast that on Twitter, Facebook, et cetera, or else just start diving into friends' accounts and start asking them questions so you know you're there. We're really about interacting with people that you care about more so than... So for example, there's no way in Formspring to just jump on and ask the community a question. You have to ask somebody specifically a question.
Okay.
And similarly, the community doesn't ask you a question in mass. Somebody that knows you somehow has to ask you a question.
Okay. Now, you've just surpassed 700 million questions. I read this post on TechCrunch, which is pretty phenomenal. That's a lot of data that you have in terms of some of the most popular questions. Is there a number one question that gets asked more than anything?
No, I mean, we don't have great statistics on the ranking of questions, but I mean, it's the questions are very broad. I would bet that the number one question is one of our stock questions that you get when you sign up for an account. Just because it's just a more, again, it's more conversational. So the questions tend to be tailored towards the person you're asking the questions of, not a specific question like, not a one question that bubbles up to the top.
Like, what did you eat for breakfast? That's not sort of topping the list.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know.
I've had that before.
Yeah.
Ade, what's the? Do you have numbers of how many of those 700 million was it questions were actually asked, and how many of them were people using Formspring's internal "Let's get things going"? I'll answer one of the stock questions that are in the queue.
That's a good question. I don't have a good handle on that number. But I should say that number is questions that were answered.
Right.
Not questions that were asked. So we're
Got
not
it.
Counting, questions that were deleted or kind of the stock. If you haven't answered it, that doesn't come into that count.
So it's definitely actual usage, actual answers that are out there.
Right. Published and in the stream. Yeah.
So Formspring, one of the issues that I have, and it's sort of a feature request, and it's sort of what's coming next. Okay, so bear with me here. So I've answered 497 questions on Formspring. So that's a pretty good number, all things considered. Not Marvel Comics number, but I've answered quite a few questions. I've gotten a lot of the same question multiple times, and usually that's I don't think it's because they didn't like my first answer. It's because they haven't. Clicked through, 10 pages to see that I already had answered that question a while ago. And what I kind of started doing at first was saying, well, I already answered that question. You should go through my archives. And then I thought, well, that's not really fair. If you've got over 400 answers, that's unfair to be asking someone to do that, because they're probably just asking me something off the top of my head.
Right.
Are we going to have some sort of, a tagging or a way for me to be able to kind of like... certain questions that maybe relate to food go here, or a way that people can search my answers more effectively than the way it is now?
Yeah, we're looking at a number of different ways to solve that. Search is one thing that we're looking into, how to do that in a way that scales across all those questions. And so ideally, yeah, they go to your profile and can kind of search your history of answers to figure out how you've answered a particular question before. You know, it's a tough challenge, not just because of the scale, but when you think about the nature of the question. So because we're FormString is more about conversational questions and answers, the question like, what's your favorite beer? There isn't a definitive answer to that, at least not necessarily every day. So your answer to that today might be different than your answer to that, you know, 3-6 months from now. And so there's an aspect of that where we're not trying to build a history of definitive answers to particular questions, but figuring out how to marry that with the challenge of, you know, you getting the same question over and over. I mean, that, you know, that's not great for the user experience either. So,
right.
It's kind of fun how much you can learn about a person. I've been looking at Sarah's page. Sorry, Sarah.
Like, oh, no, wow. It's out there. It's out there for you to read and anyone else who wants to.
Great. This is my favorite question. I have to do, say this one. Let's say there are only 100 people left alive on Earth, 50 men and 50 women. You and I, as in that person and Sarah, are in that group. What are my chances with you, Sarah? And I love your answer. Would you do me a favor and ask me again when there's actually only 100 of us left? I might be freaking out too much to want to procreate. Hard to say.
It's really true.
Well, you can just kind of dig into stuff that you would never think of asking, or you would never want to ask.
Yeah, this is a great example of why I think FormString is so fun and why I've become such a return user. I don't even have email notifications turned on. I'm just going there, and there's usually a question or two that I answer. So, you know, I'm sold. But it's kind of like, you know, they're these sort of random, sometimes someone is trying to just be funny, you know, questions that come up. It's like, it's a funny connection, you know, it and, you know, in our Twit chat room that I've got open right now, you know, it's maybe a question that I might see and just there's too much going on and it's not quite the right place to come up with a ready retort, right? But FormString is actually really good for that sort of thing. And that particular user, as I recall, was logged in. And so, you know, he knows that I know who he is, or I could look him up. And, you know, we had a good time. And hopefully he got a chuckle out of it, too. So, yeah, I've having a lot of fun. Amber, you've got to sign up for this FormString thing.
I know. I'm really interested, too, how brands are using it. You know, you mentioned that Red Bull has started to use it. And all of a sudden, for me, when I read that article on TechCrunch, I kind of had that aha moment. Well, okay, this is a way that maybe FormString can stick around, make money. Because if you think about it, there are a lot of brands where I would like to ask them questions. You know, where do you make your products? You know, I'd love to get Nike on there and be like, do you use sweat factories? Or, you know, really inquire and really have that one-on-one experience with those brands. Is the part of your business as far as brands using the service, is that a really important addition so that you can actually get revenue and keep the site alive and kicking for a while?
Yeah, it's really important for us to bring brands onto the platform, but it's not, Red Bull using that and kind of the other brands that have used that, there's no revenue in that for us. Really right now, we're just focusing on making a great product that users love and scaling out and hiring and all that before we focus too much on revenue. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for brands to use it without paying us a dime, and that's fine with us. Eventually, we'll want to make money, but not necessarily, you know, forcing brands to pay us before they get onto the platform.
So how do you guys make money? I mean, you must have sort of an inkling of an idea in terms of the future and how you're going to be profitable.
Yeah, I mean, again, right now we're not making any money. We raised some venture money a couple months ago that's basically funding us through the point where we can start experimenting with that. And we're not sure where that's going to be yet. I mean, it may be, you know, sponsorship, maybe advertising, but right now that's just, you know, right now, it's just a guess because we haven't tested anything and really haven't done a deep dive into figuring out how that's going to happen. So,
or maybe you get acquired. I mean, that seems like a pretty good option with so many questions and so many users so far.
Right. Yeah, I mean, right now we're just focusing on, we're not really looking at that either, really focusing on building out the business. And we want to get to a path where we make revenue and can sustain this long term. But it's just the realization that if we try to monetize too early, we may do that in the wrong way. And so this isn't, you know, we're not trying to be flip about getting revenue. We just feel like the best strategy is to focus on the core, the product, the company, and building that out and put us in the best position where we can monetize. So
Makes sense.
Very cool.
Very cool. Okay, well, I have to sign up. I have to get on there, answer some questions. Sarah, will you ask me a question if I sign up?
Yes. Yes. What are you going to be? Amber Mac? Hopefully it's not taken by anybody already.
I just signed up already.
I know. Ade, thank you so much for joining us. Ade Alono, CEO and co-founder of Formspring. That's at formspring.me. It's great service. It's a lot of fun. Free to use. Come hang out with us. Ask us questions and we'll answer them as long as it's not about underwear. And maybe we'll answer a few of those too.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. I love Formspring. It's such a pleasure to be able to talk to those guys because I've been reaching out to them for a while, and you know, they've been really like on the up and up growth wise. They just you know, they're now in the Valley and they've got new employees. In fact, a friend of mine is working for them now. And it's, I don't know about you, Amber, but I start to feel more and more as, you know, we're talking about Facebook usage and, you know, all these statistics and the way that sites are now all integrated with other sites, that sometimes it's the really simple concepts that grab me the most. In fact, I was just having a conversation with somebody earlier today who had come across this app that was like, you know, it was about photo sharing or something like that. And I said, I mean, why wouldn't you just use Facebook? And he went, because Facebook is a lot of other things too. I just wanted to do this one thing, and I liked this one thing that it did. That's kind of the way that I feel about Formspring, is that, you know, yeah, this functionality could be integrated in a ton of different sites, probably very easily, but it's not the same experience. I mean, this is a Q&A kind of experience, and that's why it's grabbed me anyway.
Yeah, no, you know what? It seems like a really fun site. And I'm going to sign up, although I have to say there is an Amber Mac on there. And guess what, Sarah? She's from Australia.
Really?
Yeah, she's from Australia. And I just want to be clear about this. If anyone goes to formspring.me/AmberMac, it is not me. I do not have Justin Bieber as my background photo.
Oh, look, Amber Mac from Australia. She looks adorable. But yeah, she may have a little bit different musical taste than you.
Yes, just a little bit. Even though Justin Bieber is Canadian and I love to promote people from the homeland, the reality is I don't listen to him on a regular basis. But I'll find another username and get on Formspring soon enough.
Well, Amber Mac, you'll have to come up with. I guess you could be Amber MacArthur.
I could do
that. That's still you.
And I'm really hoping that her, when she has a link to her MySpace account where it says Amber Mac 97, I really hope she's not born in 1997 because that's going to make me feel really old.
Oh gosh, don't I know it. Yeah, every once in a while I'll come across somebody's email address and there'll be a number in there and I'll go, is that your birthday? And they'll go, yeah, yeah. And I want to just weep for a little while. And
I'm going to start to do that. I'm going to be like Amber Mac 1984. That's going to be my new username. Yeah. You know, just a whole rebranding. I mean, we are all, you know, we should do it every once in a while, right?
Yeah, yeah. Don't listen to Wikipedia. I'm 29. 29.
It's all good.
I guess before we get any farther along in the show, we should talk about one of our amazing sponsors, GoToMeeting. So Amber and I, as we mentioned earlier in the show, we have never met in person, which is ridiculous, but it's true. So what happens if we want to collaborate on something, you know, remotely? We're not in the same room. What do we do? Well, if you had something called GoToMeeting, it would help you out a lot. So if you want to work with somebody, you know, anywhere, I mean, this is worldwide, but, you know, let's say Amber and I, she's in Toronto and I'm in San Francisco. And what are we going to do? We want to meet in person, but we can't for whatever reason. Traveling is obviously expensive and it's time consuming. And I don't know about you, Amber, but I'm pretty sick of traveling these days.
Yeah.
So you can stay connected to the people you work with when you hold meetings online with GoToMeeting. So how does it work? Well, you sign up. You can set up your online meetings in advance or you can set them up on the fly. So it's up to you. And then everyone in the meeting that's been invited. So let's say it's just Amber and me and maybe Amber B wants to get into the meeting. We log into GoToMeeting.com. They can see my computer desktop. Like, say I have something to show everybody. Hey, what do you guys think about this new logo for the new show? I want to get your input, that kind of thing. So everybody's collaborating visually as if we were actually all in the same room sitting next to each other. So you get this connectedness of being there without having to go anywhere, which is, you know, in this day and age, come on, that's just the way that we all need to operate. We've got to do it. So you can use GoToMeeting for things like product reviews and demos. You know, let's say you're the FormSpring guides and you want to get acquired and you got to show Facebook that you're, you know, you really know what you're talking about. Sales presentations or training sessions, just kind of collaborative stuff. Everything's from your desk or your bed or, you know, anywhere that you can turn on your computer, fire up GoToMeeting and tell your friends that it's time to chat. You can do that all at GoToMeeting.com. So if you want to sign up today, you can get 30 days free, 30-day free trial. So you really have nothing to lose if you haven't tried this thing out yet. I hope I've convinced you that it's better than, you know, paying $25 getting to check a bag on JetBlue. Right?
It's true. You know what? And I just used GoToMeeting yesterday. I had a really great experience. My friend Steve Cunningham, he was doing a webinar about using the web to market your business. And he actually did the entire thing on GoToMeeting. And it was a really awesome experience for me as someone who was joining as a panelist on the webinar. It was so easy. I literally got an invitation. I clicked on the invitation. I was immediately added to the webinar. There's a chat room happening at the same time, and just really, really seamless. I didn't even have to think about it. I didn't have to, you know, go there and register for an account. I was immediately just able to go and join the conversation that was happening in the webinar. So I recommend it for anyone who wants to do their own little webinar online. And I think there's opportunities for a lot of people to do that. It is such a cool tool, and it's really user friendly, which I love.
Absolutely. GoToMeeting, phone and voice over IP conferencing is included for free. So if you're interested, visit GoToMeeting.com/night. That's N-I-G-H-T. GoToMeeting.com/night. Thanks for being our sponsor.
Love it.
We appreciate you.
All right. So, Sarah, we are going to close this show. I have our video of the week, which is actually one of the best customer support calls I've ever heard. Maybe not as good as, do you remember when Leo took that call on his radio program where the woman was like, I can't share my neighbor's wireless anymore. She's turned it off. Do you remember that?
I do. And he said,
that was awesome.
He said, dumb question, but you're not actually just sniffing out something on an open network. And she, threw her for a loop a little bit. Yes, I do remember that call.
One of my favorites of all time. But I stumbled across this link today. It's called the Pac-Man call. Lady wants Pac-Man disabled from YouTube, or from Google, I should say. You remember when Google had the little Pac-Man game that you could play
from their homepage
a few weeks ago? Yeah,
yes.
From their homepage.
I do.
Well, this woman didn't like that very much. And this is a support call someone has recorded and put online just in the past couple of days.
Hey, Jane.
Hey, this is Brian with Builder Support.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, I had a message to give you a call.
Yes, I have, I was just installing something. I have the Pac-Man game, and I want to disable that on my homepage.
I'll go away tomorrow.
It'll go away tomorrow?
Yeah, it actually says Google in the Pac-Man game. That's just because that's what Google put there.
Okay. But how do I get rid of it?
It'll go away tomorrow.
So I can't study today?
No, you can go to wherever you want. Where are you wanting to go?
Well, I know I can go wherever I want, but the noise from the game is drowning out my Jeff Paul video.
You can close that. You don't need to leave it open.
I could close the Pac-Man thing.
No, you can close your window. Once you've got your Jeff Paul open, you can close that.
Oh, I could try that. are you in a hurry? Do you want to stay with me?
Oh, no. Yeah, I can stay with you while you do this.